From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Joe Biden hasn't been in office for even a week yet, and Republicans are already working hard to undermine the democratically elected president. Not only do far too many GOP officials at the federal and state level back the lie that the 2020 election was stolen, but many are laying the groundwork for theft of the next election. In Georgia, where Trump's loss and the loss of two GOP senators caused political earthquakes, the Republican Party is busy trying to change voter ID laws and make it harder for people of color and Democrats to cast votes. My guest is Lawrence Lessig. He is the Roy L. Furman Professor of Law and Leadership at Harvard Law School, host of the podcast Another Way, founder of EqualCitizens.us, and co-founder of Creative Commons. He's written many books, including his latest, They Don't Represent Us, Reclaiming Our Democracy. We'd had him on our program to discuss that book. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about what it is that Republicans think they're doing in maintaining this lie that the 2020 election was stolen, when journalists have confronted, you know, House representatives on interviews and asked them to simply present the evidence that they're talking about. All they've said is, well, there's millions of Americans who believe it was stolen, therefore we need to investigate it. But of course, those Americans believe it was stolen because those Republicans are the ones saying it was stolen. What did they think they're doing?
Well, I think the most important thing they're trying to accomplish is a change in the laws that will entitle people to vote in 2022 and in 2024. Obviously, finally, they've given up overturning the last election. But the predicate for tightening the regulation of voting in the minds of many people in the states is the continued claim that this last election was stolen, a claim which is obviously false, and the people who are perpetrating it know better. But their motive is purely political opportunism. And unfortunately, given the way the media in America works, it's a very powerful message for their base.
Politico had a really interesting story about how state Republicans are pushing new voting restrictions after Trump's loss. And of course, the state of Georgia is at the center of that, which was the center of the political universe from November through January, given the presidential race and the two senators' races. What was really remarkable was that one Republican in Gwinnett County, Georgia, who's on the board of elections in a suburban Atlanta. She's a Republican, Alice Olenek. She just came straight out and said that she basically doesn't think Republicans would win if the rules stayed the same. She said they don't have to change all of them, but they've got to change the major parts of them so that we at least have a shot at winning. After she made those remarks, she was called upon to resign. Should we see what Republicans are doing in Georgia as part of a long trend of an attack on voter suppression, in spite of the fact that State Secretary Brad Raffensperger in Georgia seemed to do the right thing in the one instance around the election 2020?
Well, I think that, you know, we need to wage a war for the hearts and minds of Republicans, because, you know, it's certainly the case that the Washington Republicans and some of the leaders of the state Republican Party are completely opportunistic and strategic about how to make sure their party wins. And they'll do whatever it takes. I mean, the Washington Republicans, like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, demonstrated they would do literally whatever it takes. But their focus is purely partisan. But ordinary Republicans, you know, grassroots Republicans from across the country, are not people who would say openly, look, we've got to screw up the rules so that our side wins. Ordinary Republicans, like ordinary Americans generally, want to believe that their election system is fair, and they don't actually have a reason to believe that it ought to be unfair against the other side. And so I think what we need to do is to begin talking about the principle that in some sense all Americans would say they believe in, which is that elections ought to be free and fair and everybody ought to have an equal chance to vote. Now, of course, we should concede on our side. Only legitimate, legal voters should have an opportunity to vote. And of course, we should do what we can to make sure that illegal voting doesn't happen. But those efforts should not have the intent or the effect of blocking legal voters from participating. And I think that if we can convince ordinary Republicans, then they would be willing to do the right thing in the same way that some of the key leaders in the Republican Party in Michigan and in Pennsylvania and in Georgia did the right thing in this last election. The president of the United States told them to bend the results to make him reelected. And they said, we're not going to do it. It's just not right. And I think that same integrity exists in the base, and we just have to do a better job in appealing to it.
And we now know that in the last days of his presidency, Trump tried to collude with the Federal Justice Department to try to overturn the Georgia election by working with a Justice Department official named Jeffrey Clark to essentially oust the acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen, who replaced William Barr. And of course, that effort did fail, but it just seems remarkable to me the lengths to which Trump, his Republican allies, and so many others have gone to try to overturn the election. You don't hear almost anything from the Republican Party, from Republican senators or House Republicans about what, you know, is essentially now an investigation underway at what happened at the DOJ.
Well, you know, I think it's very frustrating to me that all of the attention is actually on Donald Trump. Look, we know Donald Trump was pathological. We know that there was no limit to what he would do to try to get himself a second term. And he's gone. Now, you know, whether he'll come back is a separate question, but he's gone. Right now in Washington, there are people like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley who knowingly violated American law by standing up on January 6th and objecting to the counts of those electoral votes. Now, they'll tell you all they were doing was doing the bidding of their constituents. But what they should have done, as Mitt Romney said on the floor of the Senate, what they should have done is explain to their constituents that they had no right under the law to object to the certified results from the states. Our system for electing the president says, when the states have certified the results, so long as there is a process for contesting the results, so long as those results that process was completed 6 days before the Electoral College votes, so long as there was only one slate of electors from every state given, so long as there is no reason to believe the electors were bribed, so long as all that's true, there is no right of Congress to question the electoral results. Yet Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz stood on the floor of the Senate, and a bunch of other members of the House and Senate did as well, but these were the ringleaders who should have known better. They stood there and they acted as if it was completely legitimate for them to question the results, but it wasn't. It would be like saying, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs didn't win the Super Bowl last year because in some game, like with the Vikings, there was a bad call by the ref, and so therefore they shouldn't have won the game with the Vikings, so they shouldn't have been in the playoff. It's a completely crazy way of thinking about the process, and they knew it was wrong. And they did it anyway for their own political gain and opportunism. And what we should be doing is focusing our anger and retaliation on them, because they're still there. They can still do damage. And obviously, people who do wrong like this need to pay consequences, or they'll do it again, and there'll be no limit to what they'll do to get what they want.
Well, speaking of holding people accountable, I hate to bring it up, even though Trump is gone, there is, of course, a Senate impeachment trial that is in the works. Article of impeachment introduced by the House into the Senate on Monday. And in fact, on Tuesday, there was a test vote where 45 Republicans said they would vote to acquit Trump. And we know also that Trump sent a message to Republicans saying that he still is the leader of this party and they better fall in line. He's still wielding power, even though he's not president anymore. And worse, Republicans are still falling in line behind him. So this Capitol mob, which was Trump's last ditch effort to overturn the election through essentially a violent coup attempt, is also seemingly going unpunished because of the Republican Party, you know, choosing over and over again, choosing Trump over country and over their own party, even, it seems, and over the Constitution.
Yes. I mean, you know, it's not true that this will go unpunished. There will be lots of individuals who were riled up and marched into the Capitol who are going to be punished. The FBI is not going to stop its investigations. There are going to be criminal prosecutions, and a bunch of those people will pay significantly for themselves, because they're obviously people for whom a criminal conviction would be quite significant. But once again, it feels like, you know, we're looking at the wrong people. I mean, you know, my belief is there's no doubt this election was not stolen. There's no doubt Joe Biden should have been picked on January 6th. But a bunch of those people, of those 10,000 people who were there protesting, genuinely, honestly believed the election was stolen. They were led to believe that by, you know, like Fox News 800 times repeating that the election was stolen between Election Day and January 6th. They were told that by Breitbart. They were told that by OAN. They were told that by their news sources. They believed the election was stolen. And, you know, my own view is, what would we do if we thought the election was stolen? You know, I mean, if on January 6th, Mike Pence did what President Trump wanted him to do. Mike Pence had said, well, I'm sorry, I don't believe the votes for Joe Biden in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Georgia are legitimate. I'm going to count this alternative slate that just happened to show up for President Trump, and President Trump is now president. If Mike Pence had done that, what should a patriot have done? What would the appropriate response be? Now, you know, the difference is obviously the facts do not support the claim that the election was stolen, but those people believed it. And what we should be doing is focusing not on people who acted sensibly, given what they believed, whether it was crazy or not. We should be focusing on people who led them to believe those crazy things. And that means not just the president, but primarily the president, not just Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, but largely Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. But, you know, the networks, the news media that profits from turning people into crazy people, the system of Facebook and ad revenue on Google that profits the more they can rile people up and turn them into these partisan crazies. Those people are as responsible for what happened on January 6th as the president is, as any of those people who are on Capitol Hill. And if we don't hold them to account, the enablers to account, then we're going to see this repeated again and again, because no consequences, then no bad behavior will be stopped.
One of the ways in which the Trump administration and Republicans in general have been able to, fund their initiatives, fund these efforts is, of course, through campaign contributions. We've seen the effects of more than a decade of the Citizens United decision on our elections and the influence of that. I know you've written a lot about that. And Democrats are trying to proactively approach that by having reintroduced the Democracy for All Amendment, they're calling it, which was essentially overturned the Citizens United decision. First of all, how important is that for Democrats to kind of take this long view and also, you know, kind of go on the offense rather than waiting until election time? And how likely is it for something like this to pass? Because an amendment is a pretty big deal.
Well, it's true that the Democrats have taken the lead in reforming this corrupted political system. I think the most important thing they've done is HR1, or for the People Act, which Nancy Pelosi passed in 2019, the most comprehensive democracy reform passed by the House since the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which would change the way campaigns are funded. It would end political gerrymandering. It would restore much of the Voting Rights Act and empower people to be able to vote, overturning many of these unjust state regulations, add a whole new cadre of ethics restrictions on Congress, so congressmen are not day trading instead of doing their job. All of these changes are wrapped up in this single bill, HR1, which has been introduced again and which Chuck Schumer has now called S1 in the Senate. And if it were passed, it would have an extraordinary effect on this corrupt system. Now, in addition to that, yes, I think the addressing the constitutional problem created by the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision is important. Citizens United itself wasn't so important, but it inspired another case called Speech Now, which is a lower court decision, which created the dynamic that led to super PACs. And super PACs have become an extraordinarily poisonous influence inside of our political process. And so I do think we need to address that. But what we can do right now, what Congress could pass this year that would significantly change 2020 is the For the People Act, H.R. 1 and S.1. And President Biden committed to signing it. He, with every other major Democratic candidate, promised to introduce H.R. 1 or better legislation. And I think that sets the Democrats up because they've now committed to fundamental reform. And if we can hold them to it, then I think there's a real chance we'll see significant progress on these fundamental issues of democracy before the next election.
Now that Mitch McConnell has given up on his filibuster demand, could Democrats actually pass that? Would they need 60 votes or just 51?
Well, there's a lot of games that can be played here. So the presumption is it's going to take 60 votes. And if it takes 60 votes, it's unlikely to pass. Unless the president does a great job in convincing America that we need this fundamental reform, because we know America believes we do. And we know that Republican voters, as much as Democratic voters, believe we do. Republican voters, like Democratic voters, believe the system is corrupt. Republicans and Democrats alike hate the idea of gerrymandering. Republicans and Democrats alike affirm the idea that everybody should have an equal freedom to vote. There's no reason to tilt the system against the party that's not in power. So we all agree on this. And if it's 60 votes, it's going to be a hard fight to get it through the Senate. There are games that can be played, though. These are strategies, which Mitch McConnell has used in the other way, to get around the limits of the filibuster. My own view is it's a bad thing that a couple key Democrats, Samina in Arizona and Joe Manchin in West Virginia, have blocked the ability to overturn the filibuster.
And this is why Mitch McConnell agreed to it, because he saw those two senators speak out.
Right. And so if there's a filibuster capacity, then we're going to have a filibuster in the Senate. My own hope is that if the Republicans filibuster it, then the Democrats will allow the filibuster to happen in the way that it should happen. There should be a real vigorous debate, and the Republicans should be seen as blocking fundamental democracy reform, just like in the 1950s, they were the Southern Democrats were seen as blocking civil rights legislation. And that began to be so costly for the Democratic Party that by 1960, the Democrats began to say, look, we can't continue to be the party of racism. And they began the party of civil rights, which, of course, had been the heritage of the Republican Party. So it might be that we have to see this fight and this defeat in order to rally people to this cause. But we ought to be rallying people to this cause immediately, because a statute is infinitely easier to pass, even with a filibuster, than a constitutional amendment.
Well, it sounds from what you're saying, that how the Democrats use their power now is everything. How President Biden uses his bully pulpit, the tactics that Senate Majority Leader and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi use to promote their agenda, to showcase how Republicans are standing in the way of the agenda, and send that clear message to their base and to all Americans. All of that seems to be hugely important, marketing, if you will, that they stand for their ideals.
Yeah, the biggest reality of America right now is that we've all lost faith in our government. We don't think the government can do anything. The debacle of this pandemic response is good evidence the government can't do anything. And so I think it's absolutely critical that this team, the Biden team, deliver. And they deliver on a number of dimensions that affects the lives of ordinary Americans immediately. So that in a year or 2 years, it's possible for people to go around the country and say, look, your life is much better today than it was under the Republicans. When, the focus of the Republicans was to abolish Obamacare, pass tax cuts for rich corporations and rich Americans, do very little actually for the ordinary American.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Professor Lessig, for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Lawrence Lessig, the Roy L. Furman Professor of Law and Leadership at Harvard Law School, host of the podcast Another Way, founder of EqualCitizens.us, co-founder of Creative Commons. He's written numerous books, and you can actually watch the interview we did with him about his latest book on our website. It's called They Don't Represent Us, Reclaiming Our Democracy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.